Greetings, Value Poll listeners, and welcome to episode not 100, also known as 99, of the Poll List podcast, a bi-weekly show about comics, pop culture, and faith. That's right, we are the Poll List 99. My name is Chris Poirier, and with me as
99 balloons.
Oh, it's going to be one of those days. It's going to be one of those days, but it's good. I'm Chris, that's Hector. He puts up with me still for some reason. We're going to make it to 100. We're going to do it. How you doing? It's good. Yeah.
Bro, I don't even know. Life is its own its own thing.
I'm going to drink this right now.
I've had a couple good con experiences since the last time we did this, and then I got Rickrolled into DJing a fake Christian high school's prom that was not a Christian prom.
So is that going to be Flockward number 2?
In a realistic spectrum, that would be Flockward number 18.
Right. Oh, right. Okay. Yep.
Just because I've got the first 6 like mapped.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, that means you've done your editorial work, so that's good.
Yeah,
we have the Flockward universe map is on a corkboard somewhere.
Right after we did the last, after I did my first big con in February, a dude got it and it hit me up like within a week. Said, "All right, when is issue 2 dropping?" I'm like, I was like, you better go talk to Jesus about that one. We're gonna see how that plays out.
We don't do comic timelines here. I mean, even comic book people are like, no. I think it was Mitch Gerard recently put on Twitter, making comics on an actual timeline sucks. It's like, I feel that. I'm not even directly in this and I feel that.
But Mitch Gerard saying that is hilarious because he doesn't even tell whole stories when he makes comics.
Oh, bro, don't be that way to him.
Dude, when is the last time you saw him make a when's the last time you saw him make a functional Umbrella Academy? And real quick, this is just editorial note. I'm not seeing any squiggle lines on my talkie talks down there.
Oh, you're good. I see him.
You see him?
Yep.
Okay.
It's for the podcast. It's happening.
Let's see. All right, great.
See? In real time, people get to find out whether we're doing our jobs or not. But that means we've got to do the thing, so strap yourselves and prepare yourselves, for we've got Comic Sign. Better put the word out. Can't wait for the nerd out. Better put specs on. Better bring next song. I cut handsome checks.
Wait, we haven't started yet.
Yeah, this is happening. So on today's episode of The Poll List, we have a show for you. It's going to happen. It's happening as you listen now. It's as live as it's going to get. We're going to hit the latest news for you, what you need to know. Our poll recommendations from the last 4 weeks, which means we've expanded, which means I have to do the thing semi-fast, or you get bonus material. This is The Poll List Podcast.
Matt could chop it up into 2 episodes.
We'll make it. It's a 2-part episode, which means 100's never going to get here.
It's 99.1 and 2.
Or it's 0.5.
0.5, yeah.
Yeah. So, there's a lot going on in the poll list today.
99 Snyder Cut.
99. So.
Can I just say that on the 99 thing, I didn't watch Brooklyn 99 until, like, I guess the pandemic or somewhere.
I think I was the same. I was late to that party, which meant I got to watch almost all of it.
Yeah. I watched the ending of it actually in real time. But what makes me sad is when I went to San Diego, they had a walkthrough 99 experience where they actually had the station set.
Nice.
And you could walk through and I didn't care because I didn't know what it was. And I'm like, aww. I missed the chance to walk through the studio set. But okay, whatever. Go on.
Well, it's all about them missed opportunities, friend. So DC's doing a lot. I think,
but are they doing the most?
I don't know if that's a if that's technically something that you want to win at in comics right now.
I'm just curious. Yeah.
But they might be. I don't know. Marvel actually is cranking out a lot right now. Not that, like I said, that's good, but it's happening. No, but I think I mentioned it last time that DC is putting a lot of things back into print. I think last time I talked about that Amalgam is being republished so that people can see all the Marvel and DC crossover event stuff. But DC didn't stop there. They are also putting a lot of their Elseworlds back into print. So all of your favorite Elseworlds stuff is going to slowly be rolling back out this year. But that is a prelude to them returning to new Elseworlds material. So keep an eye out through the summer and into the fall. You'll start seeing some of the older Elseworlds type stuff, which is kind of their external to continuity, but kind of crazy stories. Now, granted, the way that DC is doing their timeline thing right now, I don't know if that actually matters, but here we are. So if you like kind of those crazy, really off the wall stories that sit adjacent to continuity, DC's like, heard you, fam, and they're giving you the old stuff and going to crank on some of that new glorious Elseworldy type stuff as the year continues on.
Well, here's the thing, though. All this stuff that DC is basically just labeled as Elseworld ends up being canon anyway if it performs well.
Because that, or just their new methodology of technically in a multiverse that is functioning, all of these are possible.
All worlds are Elseworlds.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how they talk about that going forward, because they kind of revisited the multiversity thing by saying not 5G, but also 5G is technically a multiverse that functions in its entirety and whatever. Continuity is
all this possibility.
Continuity is random.
And they couldn't find a multiverse where they respect Dan Didio.
Ooh.
Which, by the way, he's at a con with me soon.
welcome to Hot Takes with Hector, and he's not wrong. Get Didio on the show. It's your one job.
Holy crap, I would love Didio on the show.
Oh, he's a lot of fun.
I know he is.
That, and since he's left DC, his filter is like 100% broken, and I'm here for it. Absolutely here for it. All right, moving right along. Let's talk about the thing nobody wants to talk about, because it's weird, it's interesting, and there's a lot of different takes on it. I will preface this with, it is someone from Bleeding Cool that has done this adventure. But there's been recent accusations that DC artists have been using AI in actual print. Not, you know, like DCEU, not the movies, whatever, but in stuff that we've actually already seen and some things that are supposedly coming up. It's not a short article. It's not, you know, Rich Johnson being like, they're using the AI, and then throws a smoke bomb and runs away. It's a long form article with photos and a long discussion about how you recognize AI art, what things kind of stand out as potential issues, etc. And it's not short. So they brought receipts, and whether you agree or not, it's in the show notes. But it's an interesting discussion, because a lot of people right now are obviously about the AI is theft, AI, and which in many forms it is, because it's basing a lot of...
Remember that one like week in 2022 when everybody had AI profiles and then all their artist friends got mad and we all disappeared and act like that never happened? Good times.
No.
Because you definitely didn't see you with a profile photo like that, and then me with amazing hair, like, in it. So,
dude, half of my profiles gave me hair back, and I looked like Chris Pine, and I was like, I wish, bro.
It's just like, yeah, we all had that thing. We all paid $5, got some profile photos, and then never talked about it again. Because never AI again. Is theft, and we support our artist friends.
We love you guys. So if you're curious about it, there's a lot of the pictures in there. The ones that they're using as their examples are actually some of the creepy, hyper-realistic Joker images that were littered throughout Joker Year One. There's a couple others in the article, but they're mostly from that, which is interesting. I don't know, man. It's an interesting discussion in that DC didn't really respond to it, which is probably the right answer, because either they did do it and they're like, crap, we got caught, and they don't want to go down that road, or they just don't want to give it any credence whatsoever. And who knows? But if you kind of want to walk through at least what this person thinks they saw or didn't see, at least they kind of laid out their receipts.
All right.
It's a thing.
So I said I had my commentary on this just to throw this out. First off, I feel like this is the next corporate witch hunt.
Could be.
Because, you know, you like you said, Marvel got caught like not even like.
It was MCU stuff.
It was MCU
and stuff. And they came out and said, yep, we did it.
Like for Secret Invasion, the theme yep. was.
All of it was AI.
Yeah. Which I got the idea of why that's a interesting idea to do for that.
Artistically, I was thinking the same thing when everyone was beating that up. I was like, isn't that the point?
Is that we're being infiltrated and everything else? I was like, I think I get the vibe on that. That's whatever.
Yeah, I actually didn't understand people getting upset about that one because I thought the same thing. I was like, that's the point.
Is that we can't tell they're among us and everything else. Yeah, I was like, I enjoyed that concept, even if it upset some folks. But here's what I will say. On the, you know, oh, it's AI. My comic book got flagged for AI.
Ooh. By how much?
I don't know that. They didn't give me that.
Yeah, a lot of... You see, what this guy... And I haven't had a chance to play with the tools is there's a tool that actually gives you percentages based on pulling an image apart of what it believes to be human versus machine-made. So you could see that also it wasn't 100%. So I'd be curious to see that type of thing because some of the tools out there... I don't know how they do it. It's the irony is it's probably AI looking at AI going, yep, that's me.
Yeah. It's like asking a robot to
do its own CAPTCHA check.
Yes.
It's like foiled by the check mark.
But like I had to do that. My comic when I published it to Kindle got flagged.
Oh, interesting.
Two different times. Like it didn't get flagged like in print, but when I loaded it to Kindle, I had to talk or email two different checkpoints to verify. Like I had to literally hold up Lyle's giant artwork.
Oh, weird. You had to be like, no, this happened.
I was seriously. Like, look, this is drawn. This is print. Like I had to prove it. So that just makes me like when you're using the tool thing, I'm like, yeah, well, so did I. Now, the hyper realistic stuff and the crazy things, I get it. But like at the same time, like. Sister Purdy's a witch, so you know.
I see what you
a pox on you, Gertie Putnam.
Some of y'all just got really confused and need to read more.
Reverend Hale. I played five different roles in versions of the Crucible in my theatrical life.
Yeah, and also, if most of you haven't gone through that experience, did you really do theater in high school? Just saying.
Yeah. If you didn't do the Crucible every other year, were you even an actor?
What just happened? So we throw that out there for our wonderful viewer / listenerships. You know, absorb that. Tell us what you think.
And do you care? Do you want storytelling?
Yeah, do you even? Yeah, that's valid.
Do you care if it's AI, if it tells a good story and they're upfront about it? Now, where I see this, though, is like a lot of cons are putting out things now in your artist alley and your vendor spots that say AI art is not art. It's dead. Right. It's not welcome. And so now on con applications, you actually have to check. Is this AI? Are you selling anything AI generated? So that's part of the equation.
So we're doing the human check for the machine.
Interesting.
What? I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords. What? I feel like this is a good opportunity for a Helldivers 2 reference, but I'm going to leave all you alone.
I don't have a PlayStation.
Well,
I have Lyle's PS4 sitting over there, but...
Yeah, well, there you go. You could be spreading democracy with the rest of us cool kids.
Can you play that on PS4?
Maybe it isn't for... I don't remember. Anyway, it's for the kids.
Wu-Tang is for the children.
It is always for the children.
Did you see that Todd made a Wu-Tang mosaic? That was great.
And I put in the comments, because it's for the children.
I said that because he got commissioned when I was there for that. And I was like, it's for the children.
It's always for the children. So, Garth Ennis. You've probably heard that name before.
He's my third favorite Garth. Go on.
He's the third favorite. Is coming back to Marvel. And specifically to write a Punisher / Fury story called Get Fury. I'm really curious about this because Garth typically does not do books that are for the children.
No, he's aggressive.
He's super aggressive. But that's another thing that's coming out later this year. So if you are into Garth's absolute form of insanity that makes it to the comic book page, congratulations, you're going to get some Punisher and Fury on the Marvel side of the house. I'm at least going to read it.
Fair.
See how insane it is. Next time, we also more likely than not will be talking about Daredevil number 8, which has a legacy number, but I already forgot it, so I don't care. But it's the 60th anniversary of Daredevil, so Daredevil number 8 is going to hit that 60 mark in the middle of the crazy story that's going on right now. And because we're in the middle of the podcast, I will say it here because it didn't make either of our polls.
Yeah, it did.
Oh, it did? Great. Well, then I'll save it for later.
Daredevil 7 did, yeah.
Well, all right.
I just didn't do my homework, guys. I haven't put in my list yet. He doesn't know. Yeah, he's going to be surprised.
Some of us are professionals, but it's fine.
Some of us got Rickrolled into DJing a satanic prom, okay?
Are you okay, bro?
No, I'm not. I came home so angry last night. It was the worst. But
wow. All right. Well, that's a thing. Wow. moving right along, I suppose.
Please, for the love of God, don't make that the episode title.
Nope. I think I've made enough 9-9 references. It should be pretty obvious by now.
Just put noise.
Yeah, I should have put
9-9 noise.
Noise. Cool. So Lore Olympus, some of you may or may not be familiar with. Hector brought to my attention pre-show, and this is a valid point, that Lore Olympus continues to be, but will soon be ending this year in 2024, but was kind of what launched Webtoons like into the stratosphere as a digital platform for comic storytelling.
It's the first Webtoon to get Hot Topic merch. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
And you can buy commercial merchandise for it.
I think you can go back to when it came out, and Hector talked a lot about it. So we've mentioned it once or twice here on the show, and it is pretty amazing. And you can get it in hard copy. Finally now from most places.
It was also in development for an animated series at one point.
That's true. Didn't Netflix buy it?
I think Netflix bought the rights, but that also was right around the pandemic.
Mm.
And I don't
maybe
know
the, if maybe they'll wait for it to finish.
Yeah. It was supposed to be a live action at one point. It was supposed to be an animated at one point. Either way, the property is ripe, but
So Lore Olympus is ending, and so what? That's like a 4-year run, I think?
Oh, no.
3 or 4.
No.
Is it longer?
Way longer. Like, hold on.
It's not longer than 5, because that's as long as we've been here.
No.
Yeah. Hold on. We're professionals here. Let us Google that.
2018, bro.
2018.
That is longer than 5, dear sir. That is 6. Do math.
I don't do math. Especially not in public. See, we broke all of the rules.
Yeah. It is 6 years, bro.
It probably, yeah. So there we have it. It's a thing. It's older than us.
It's older than us. I feel like we started in more than
it was very close to then.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then finally, because it's comic book adjacent and because I want to make fun of it, Marvel Rivals is a new video game that apparently is going to be somewhat Overwatch. Ish in its play style. It is PvP. It's not cards. It's actually, you know, the Avengers and Marvel characters doing things, I suppose. It's out there. It's a thing. It's happening.
Yeah.
Marvel video games just don't tend to stick, but
hold on now. Some Marvel games do really well.
Okay, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy was a masterpiece.
There it is.
Good talk. Spider-Man games.
Technically Sony properties.
Sony property, Marvel game.
That Sony developed. Yeah. We have to remember that the only time that good things come out of Marvel is when somebody else does it for them.
And we are pull list number 1, according to my Googles, dropped in November 15th, 2018.
So we probably talked about it end of that year.
Yeah. Because the first one was
pretty early.
The Batman 53 one.
Yep.
Yeah.
The OG OG.
OG OG.
Well, I don't think there's any more news. Did I miss anything? Stuff happened, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But that's what I've got. So that's what you need to know. That's our biweekly look at the industry and delivering you some insider-ish knowledge. As always, you can join in the conversation with Hector and I and all of your nerdy friends over on the Love Thy Nerd Discord. Hector even answers those occasionally, and so do I. So begin your geeky adventure together with us. Aww. Tell us what you liked, what you hated, what we probably missed. Tell us why AI is either, you know, awesome or apparently of the devil.
We'll hold hands and turn pages.
Aww. Aww. Oh, new tagline, adding it. Noise.
We'll make Taylor Swift style friendship bracelets that save the planet.
For everyone.
For everyone.
Join our special Patreon that doesn't exist.
Fictional Patreon gets you a Taylor Swift style and Taylor Swift
inspired
friendship bracelet.
Legally distinct.
Legally distinct friendship bracelet.
Similar yet legally distinct. There it is.
It's a parody bracelet. That's what it is.
There it is. Nailed it. It's satire, which means we can do it all day. Or I can do this all day. There we go. So yeah, what books did you read, seeing as I don't know?
You don't know. Well, since we already mentioned, I'll jump into Daredevil number seven.
It was seven because, yeah, eight's the one that's coming, but seven is the... Shall we call it Daredevil blood soaked?
Okay, and that's actually one of the main reasons this landed in my polls.
Okay, fair enough. And that I figured out because we've been going through all the different sins that have been attacking him as demons and everything. At first I was like, where is this going? And then I was like, oh, I know.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's like you would take that Wolverine would be wrath, but is in fact lust, and that was the big thing. So here's what I was going to say is, like, as I was turning pages, you get Matt Murdock in his white Daredevil outfit to start the issue out as he's confronting Wolverine at the bar with no name. But why it's fantastic, even just in the visuals, and it's worth reading for that, because this is a super bloody issue.
It brings a whole new meaning to bloodlust.
It does. But what it really does is, like, seeing Matt Murdock's blood slowly turn his white costume back to red is a visual, like, kind of, it's a smooth move, because you go from sparkly white to like this in a few pages. He had a bad day. Listen, he fought Wolverine and lived. Okay, realistically, bro, I mean, if y'all are watching this, look at this page. If this amount of blood exited a normal human's body, he dead.
He did.
He dead.
D-E-D.
Yeah.
Dead.
This is not, that's not kosher.
That's not how this works at all.
There is more out than it is in. Let's just say that.
That does not belong there.
But, and I'll say, for the pure visual of watching the white costume turn red was dope. There are two in context quoted scripture passages. Mm-hmm. And I will say that I gave them props because I didn't know the reference of one off top, and I actually looked up scripture based on the fact I didn't recognize the reference. 1 John 1:9, that was easy. There's one in there at 2 Timothy 1:2, I believe. And that if a person purifies themselves or whatever, it's just like,
right.
I was like, and they played the two verses in context in tandem with each other. And I'm like, somebody did some homework. Look at you guys. And I was like,
you Googled something.
I was like, but what I say to this, it really does add a layer to Matthew Murdock's character when you see scripture playing a functional part.
It's true.
And I would say that across this series, it's developed more and more that way. So
that's true.
There's that. I'll jump onto the other one. I feel we've got more to talk about on this one. Wonder Woman number 7.
Ah, yes.
All right. The whole functional idea of this is Wonder Woman and Superman have gone into an intergalactic mall to find Batman a birthday present. Now, this is in the middle, and what's the editor's note at the beginning? The following takes place right after the events of Wonder Woman number 5, right before the birthday of a certain Dark Knight. So this episode, this one takes place before the world declares war on her officially.
And if you're really confused, welcome to the rest of the party.
Yeah, because here's the deal. This fit, now, why I would see the negative of this, this one does not fit tonally over where we've been for the last 2 months.
It felt a little jarring, honestly. It's why I was like, I want to like this, and because it reminds me of when Tom King basically takes those types of breaks. Like, it reminded me of the double date from his last series, you know, and that's why it didn't make my list, but I did dig them all because he did what Tom King also does of there's a lot of cool little references / points he makes that are not the center of focus on any panel.
Okay, and so why it made my list outside of, because it's a stupid story.
It's not great.
It's not a great story. But what it is, and I think you'll hear, click with me on this, it is Tom riding good Superman.
That's fair.
And
because it was really a Superman story more than it was
a Wonder Woman story. Wonder Woman was the reflection of that, of his character in this. I have to talk to you about a term. We're gonna deviate for a minute at some point, unless this fits some other category.
We're not gonna talk about Earth Bucks and misspelling people's names on cups.
No, that was great though. That was straight Jim Halpert to do a Sup Man thing.
Sup Man. Yeah.
There, you've got Superman doing dad jokes, but you get some of the most sincere Superman writing in a while, and we haven't got Tom King writing Superman basically since the last Batman era.
That's fair. And I was going to say, hey, at least it's not dragging someone's dead mother through the desert. Bro, because I'm getting that in.
Let it go. Let it go. I was like, are we going to make it? No, we're not.
No. Tom King has came up in this episode. Absolutely not.
He comes up in every literal episode. The first episode was about him.
Darn it,
he's
Tom,
my favorite writer.
Why are you so good?
He is so good. But like, you get Superman being his, like, some genuine Supermanness in layers we haven't seen before, and you get Wonder Woman responding sweetly to it. And I just enjoyed that dynamic. The issue's dumb for the sake of dumb, and you don't even have to read the rest of it.
You could actually pick this up in complete isolation and probably be happy with it.
Yeah.
In some context.
And if you just enjoy Superman being genuinely sweet and reflective, and Wonder Woman like smiling through the pain of things, this is a good issue. But yeah. I will, if the story's bad, but the writing's good, I'll still take it. And that's where this lands. And I'm going to do a quick detour because I learned a new term this week in pop culture, and it kind of shook me to my core. We've in past comics and recently we've talked about that, the fact that Gail Simone coined the term fridging. When you kill or wound a female character just for the advancement of a male character.
Right.
That's a fridging. I learned a similar concept this week from a writer, and it was sent to me because it literally is the embodiment of three of my favorite pop culture properties of all time. Okay.
Are you going to make all of us sad after this?
Who knows, bro? So there is the other side of the coin of fridging.
Okay.
Where instead of killing a female character, a female character only exists to take a distraught male character to an emotionally healthy place.
Okay.
Which is better. But it's like that. It's okay if the female character doesn't have a story arc or driven or actually propelled for their own good, as long as they're propelling the male character.
Right. It fails the Bechdel test, but
right. It fails the Bechdel test. And this was sent to me because there are three prime examples of where this exists, and they literally are all three in my top five movies of all time. Number one, they said what created the term is, and by the way, here's the term, manic pixie dream girl.
Oh no.
Yeah, get ready, bro. The term was created for Kirsten Dunst's performance of Claire in Elizabethtown, which is one of my all-time favorite films, Cameron Crowe film. And that term was coined in her review of that performance. And someone's went to do a character analysis of characters that fit this archetype. The second character that also fits it is in my all-time favorite movie, Penny Lane and Almost Famous, also Cameron Crowe.
Interesting. I'm sensing a trend, but that's a good, that makes sense.
That does make sense. And then the third one, bro, the third one is what wrecked me. Ramona Flowers.
I knew that's where it was going.
You knew it. You knew
it. Well, based on the name, I was like, it's like a literal definition.
But I will say that is shifted away from with the animated series.
It's actually inverted it.
They've inverted it. But it says that this was the quote that I read. This is a trope of writers who are waiting for free women to come and show them how to live their lives. And it hurt my soul because it's not wrong. How many dudes are sitting out there waiting for a woman who's figured life out or is more free than they are to show up and fix things? And so that's why it ends up in such stories, is because that's what people are waiting on. So add that to your catalog of things to look for in writing. Fridging, the Bechdel test, and which is if how many lines of dialogue a woman has per thing, correct?
It's actually multiple things. The Bechdel is that a woman's only purpose is to basically exist, to either be saved, or basically they exist in the movie to prop up a male main character is part of it. But yes, that if there's a love interest, it's only because of the dude, not because of her. It's the whole inverted thing. And I did a terrible job of describing that, so you all should just Google that and make sure that you get it exactly right.
But one of the things I saw was like, it's the word count per.
That is part of it, that they basically they exist, but they practically don't.
Yeah. The article is the.
All right. I got it. Okay. I was looking for the short version of it. It's number one, that at least two women are featured, that these women talk to each other and that they discuss something other than the man, which comes down to basically. How much dialogue do they have, and does it serve the purpose of the fact that they exist as independent characters, or because do they only exist because that there is a male in that scene, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, I'm still doing a terrible job, but that was the basic definition I was looking for to make sure I got it out there.
But adding fridging, the Bechdel test, and then manic pixie dream girl, I was like, yeah, it's like that tracked. Okay, I'll just throw that out there because it ruined my life.
Anyway, fam, guys can do better.
Well, and I don't even think it's a negative thing in terms of writing. I think it's reflective of where our hearts are.
That's fair.
And I think that's why.
Because in those three examples, I'd probably argue that might not have necessarily been the intent. Almost Famous is a tough one.
But here's the thing. Almost Famous is a real story.
Yes. No, that's a good point.
And that Penny Lane is a real woman. She actually came to the Broadway show and everything.
Hector is a super fan there.
I'm a super fan of Almost Famous. Tatted on my chest. But that's just one of those things. Like, I think because Cameron Crowe wrote Elizabethtown, because when his dad died, he was waiting for his relationship with his wife to fix it. And, you know, it's just, it's hard. Anyway, it was reflective. It hit my soul. By the way, there was disagreement with our analysis of comparing Kingdom Come and,
it's okay. They could be wrong. Twilight.
I think the points were valid on their end too. But I'll say this, sticking with Avengers Twilight on my list of, it is number four, still good. You get, you get the whole Avengers team versus Tony Stark's kid. You get the return of Thor in action. You get a very grown up and mature Kamala Khan. You get a new Hawkeye. And here's one of my favorite things about it. There is a, at this point in time, we're way past spoilers of the story in terms of chronological. There was a bullseye working for the bad guys. And she flips the script and joins the good guys. And it, here was the dialogue. And it was a downright biblical moment of Captain America says, "You're no bullseye. I know a Hawkeye when I see one." And that's literally all it took is her to him to say that. And then she just referred to his Hawkeye through the rest of the story. To add to the, we're in the deep sci-fi future. Check this real quick. That is a Tony Stark's functional head in a jar via Futurama. And he's a functional part of the Avengers team now. They put his jar head in a robot body. So he's literally the fish from Megamind. He's the fish from, he's David Cross's fish character from Megamind. That tracks. You get to see a new Avengers team assembled, and you get to see Red Skull back in full functioning thing. Like the end teaser, because we're a month out, is that Red Skull is in a Iron Man upgraded body. And he stopped pulling the strings from behind the curtain. He straight up told Iron Man's kid, "I'm running everything and you're my puppet. God bless America."
Thank you for playing.
Let's see. Oof. Batman Dark Prisons, Batman number 145. I enjoyed that a lot.
It was fun. I went back and forth on whether it made my list. People will understand why it didn't make my list when I get to it. I was kind of there too. I thought I wanted Batman to be good again, and year one for Joker kind of like reset it, because I really felt like we were starting to get lost in the sauce, such as it were, and that now we kind of feel somewhat regrounded. We're still doing the Zur thing and fail safe, but I feel like we're going to get somewhere with it now.
Yeah. Well, fail safe is in a body. Bruce is in a cell captured with the Joker. Their interactions are great. I honestly think this was good for me just because you got Failsafe versus Red Hood versus Damian, and I thought that was an enjoyable experience. And you've got Batman walking around in bandages in prison looking like Hush, which was well done on the cover of like, is Hush Batman? Like, it's literally the vibe it gave.
Thanks, I hated it, but yeah.
Yeah, I was like, did you get me with that cover? Sure.
Got him.
But I will say the little tag that got me really good at the end is that you get a full description, and I feel like this honestly belongs Joker Year One-ish, but whatever, is that you get why specifically the creepy face-off Joker was created, where he cut his own face off. Like, you get to that point at the end of this issue, so that was fun.
It was one of my all-time favorite arcs, Death of the Family.
Death of the Family, yeah. Definitely for me. Nightwing was dope. And this one, it was dope simply because you get Batman being... Okay, I'll say this. I feel like one of my only things I don't love about Zdarsky's arc right not my only thing. One thing I don't love about Zdarsky's arc right now
let
is,
me count the waves.
Let me count them. Is the defragmented state of the Bat family that's supposed to carry over, but it doesn't carry over.
Mm.
Because it doesn't carry over to the other books and maintain it well. But this whole issue is Batman teaming up with Nightwing to save a kid that's been kidnapped. And the whole book, you get Batman being reflective on who Nightwing is as a person and how good of a person he is. And like I mentioned this in the last one, even though it's been a month, like one of the things that the kid was like, he's on my pencil box. And there comes a moment where Nightwing is saying, Batman's asking Nightwing about something, and Nightwing just looks at Batman and says, I'm on his pencil box. And that's literally his justification for what's about to happen. And I'm like, that's such a sweet thing. I enjoyed it. And then this was genuinely a tie between She-Hulk number 7 or 6 and Batman and Robin number 7. It is going to go to Batman and Robin number 7 for the same paternal and relational things of you get to see Batman responding to a girl having interest in Damian.
Mm.
He had a girlfriend during his whole run on Robin number whatever's, like when he was on Death Island with Flatline. But you get Flatline teaming up with Batman and Robin. And they further the shush story a little bit with this. And that's it. That's all I got. All right. Tell me of your stories.
Yeah. So, you know, you probably gathered that was slightly more books than we usually say, because we figured we give you the extra sized issue 99.
Point one.
So it's technically a shared book because Hector keeps wanting to fight me for it, but
I want to fight you.
I almost got every single book in this week to be number ones, which I do occasionally when I can't find anything worth reading. I read a lot this week, and yeah, but Penguin, continues to be kind of great. And so number 8 was this time around, and I love how we got this slow burn thing of Oswald's kind of super rise to power here, that Gordon and another cop detective are walking into this building that we know that the Penguin lives in, and they start off with, yeah, there's 37 bodies starting from the lobby up the stairs to like the apartment where Oswald lives. And it's a combination of those two talking about what's going on and us kind of seeing what happened leading up to this moment in time of Oswald returning to Gotham and literally all of Gotham basically being like, please don't kill me.
And this literally does go from like the last 5 or 6 issues have all been backstory of his rise to power.
Right.
And so we're finally back to here we are.
It's game on. And so he also has that cool little interaction with the Riddler, where the Riddler has a bad day.
That gave me, and I know this is a deep cut, but it's one of my favorite books. That also gave me a throwback vibe to the end of Hush, like the first Hush arc.
Oh, yeah.
He sits down at the table. Yeah.
It's good. I'm sure that is probably on purpose, but there's a lot going on here. The art is still kind of great. Oswald is still kind of crazy and scary. And I think that's the point. Because, yeah, this is still a lot of fun.
I will say one detail in there that I picked up that I don't know that maybe I've forgotten is that the help is the son of Ra's al Ghul.
Mm.
Like, what? Where? Huh? Like, was that previously established? Did I miss that?
I don't recall, honestly. But yeah, there's a lot going on.
But
and
the
it's
help,
subtle, which is good.
The help. If you missed it, if you read that one passage quickly, you might have missed it. But the help is the least loved son of Ra's al Ghul.
It's okay. Daddy loves you.
Sort of.
sort of. And now I'm going to give you a bunch of number ones that weren't my number one, and that'll give you the number one. But because a lot of books kicked off in the last 4 weeks.
Yeah. Spring is a good time for that.
Yep. And so one of those is Boom Studios' Man's Best.
Oh, it's a kitty.
It's got kitty and puppers. And you kind of get this futuristic story of these animals. I'm not fully aware whether they actually talk to humans or not, because they kind of go back and forth on this. But we can read the dialogue either way, and we get introduced to them that they're like fighting in like a holodeck kind of thing. These robots, and the two humans are these doctors, and one doctor's like, why do you do that? Like, she's like, it's fun. They enjoy it and stuff. And he's like, but why? And their little ship crashes and they end up on a planet of robots. And suddenly all of the animals have a purpose because they know how to defeat robots. And we find out that these animals are one of the doctor's emotional support animals. And they are about to embark on a mission to save their humans. And the little pug has a rocket that can fly and shoot things in the face. So how can you not love the bestest boys and girls trying to help their humans?
And if you're not as much of an animal person as Chris is, will you have fun?
That's probably my question.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty, it's funny.
Cause I mean, I'm not an animal hater, but I'm also not as much of an animal lover as Chris. So
that's probably fair, but it's kind of a goofy story, but the art's really good, and it's kind of like a, I don't know, it's animals saving their humans in space with robots. Also back, The Goon, Eric Powell's creation, and this is Them That Don't Stay Dead. It's only a four-parter, but Dark Horse, like, everything that is The Goon is back in all of its black and white, really random goodness. So if you are all about The Goon and the work that Eric Powell does, you will not be disappointed here. It is a very fun kind of slapstick, really off the wall. It's an adult book, warnings and such, but it's pretty great. I'm going to say nice things about Marvel.
Yay, it's that time.
It's that time.
Did the legal team hit you up again?
Right? It's like, so... Anyway.
You're due.
The Web of Spider-Men's number one, which technically isn't a book. And what I mean by that is it's technically... A lot of comic companies have done this lately, and I featured one of these a few weeks ago with Ghost Machine, that this book actually technically talks about all the different spider books that are kind of going on, and they guise it with Madam Web being like, I hold the web of life together. And it, then
this was Marvel's very last ditch effort to try and save
to make Madame Web make make something make sense, make it
relevancy
make sense.
And okay, yeah and but then, the fact that hold on, but she's dressed like Dakota Fanning. She's not dressed like OG Madame Web, so yeah, that is a direct please let us make some residuals off this market. Go on.
And then it jumps directly into Edge of the Spider-Verse, Miles-ish story, which is also kind of not subtle, but there's little anthology pieces across all of the different spider books in here. And at the end of each little piece, they tell you which books either they are currently in and where they fall in the story or what book is about to come. So this is where I say something really nice about Marvel while also saying something terrible. So this should be your shocked moment of Spider-Man is really great in small doses when you don't have the whole book to read, because the likelihood of me reading any of these books because of this is actually very low, because I feel like I haven't picked up any of these books and went, wow, that was really good. But these four pages from each of these books were really good. So if you do at least want to find out maybe where your jam is currently in and across all of the Spider-Man's books, this is good, because you can kind of get a snapshot and be like, okay, that's what this is all about. And then we also need to talk about, there's these two goofballs from the TVA that you might have seen before in this book. And I think Hector pointed out that this is the first appearance of OB.
It is the first appearance of Ki Hong Ki. Yeah, it's the first appearance of his. Yeah, I'm going to jack his name up. It's the first appearance of OB in comics.
So that was at least fun. But that's also an $8 comic. So if you want to make an $8 investment to find out maybe which spider books might be a place to jump in on the massive web that is the spider books at the moment, that's actually probably worth your time. And it is fun as an anthology book. So I didn't hate that I spent $8 on it, which technically is a win for Marvel.
Anytime you can spend $8 on a book and it be a win, that's a win.
Yeah. Moving right along, I actually have two things, and I don't know if it's fair to say that I picked this because it's Marvel or if it's because of who did it, but Ultimate X-Men, Peach Momoko. Armor. Yes, and so it is an armor origin-ish story in the Ultimate Universe. Peach Momoko writing and drawing, and if you're not familiar, I just adore the art style. And the storytelling is usually very thick in Japanese culture. In fact, all the way in the back of this book, is pretty great. Provides a page that actually breaks down a lot of cultural things that were specifically pointed out in this book and why they exist. So that's super fun. But yes, this is very much kind of in the Ultimate Universe, a story of how Armor finds out about her powers and everything. And what's kind of cool is in this version, like the armor that manifests itself. Where is it? There's a really good picture in here somewhere. Is kind of like of a samurai.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And like,
because in the original Astonishing X-Men run, it was just like bubble.
Right. Yeah. That's basically like, yeah. So it's like this samurai slash, it kind of looks like a demon. And I think it's partially because she's battling with the, I'm capable of this, but I don't understand it. And it's very, very X-Men type story in the, this is happening and I don't understand. And that it came out of a traumatic event in the child's life. So like this is good. Do more of this, Marvel.
I saw that on the shelf and almost got it just because I enjoyed Astonishing X-Men. Whedon's run is still one of my favorite Marvel books ever. And Armor was just really good in that.
Is good. Let's see. Down to my last regular poll. Here's my last two books are going to be, wow, Chris, really? So here we go. Dawn Runner is a Dark Horse book. And how do I describe this? So in a future.
In a future.
With aliens.
With aliens.
Anyway, they show up and they manifest themselves in a lot of different ways across this planet. And you kind of, it's kind of got this Attack on Titan vibe that there are people living inside the walls and that stuff is living outside of the walls, kind of thing. And that we don't hear a lot about the alien tech, except that humanity is definitely kind of at war with whatever it is. And so you end up with this kind of kaiju feel, of, I'm trying to find the picture, like big ugly scary things that are outside the wall. But what Dawn Runners are people that interface with giant robot tech outside biologically. So I'm sitting here going, all right, so it's an Attack on Titan, Neon Genesis Evangelion. And
I was going to say Avatar Pacific Rim, but okay.
And
cool.
And Akira. And I almost went Pacific Rim, but because it's so specifically biological connection to the suit.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Like, Avatar.
And they even go to that level in here. So, oh, by the way, if you haven't seen Neon Genesis, sorry. I'm waiting for the, just get in the robot Shinji moment, but, so yeah, it very much looks like Eva's and that type of thing, which means this is going to mess your brain up at some point, because if this is, if any of those things I just uttered are the source material, this story does not end happy. But it is, it's got all those feels, and it's kind of wild. And, but anyway, kind of like Pacific Rim and those types of things, though, the Dawn Runners are kind of treated like superstars. That people know what they are and who they are, kind of thing. So there's
he's
a
on
lot.
My pencil box.
Yeah, right. There's a lot going on here. And oh, I didn't even catch this. And it's written by Rom. So I'm sorry, not sorry. This guy is just doing mentally interesting things lately because he's the Rare Flavors and he's got some other books.
I was about to say,
out.
That's Rare Flavors guy, right?
Yep. Yeah, script by Rom. I completely missed that when I picked that up. Too easy.
Sure you did.
That means there actually is going to be something that makes your head hurt in here. So yeah, what was the number one you absolutely had to number one? And then I'll give you my number one and utter a phrase that shouldn't be shocking to anyone.
Yeah. I'm going to give you two number ones I didn't enjoy. first off,
every other Marvel number one that came out over the last 4 weeks is the books that I didn't enjoy, but go on.
Under York.
I picked that up too, and I'm imagining for the same reason you did, and I almost didn't finish it.
Dude, it was so, yeah, I was like,
yeah. I was like, give me a point to this, and it didn't feel like it got there.
Nope, and that's same. And then Spider-Punk, Arms Race, number one.
I wanted to like it, but yeah. I couldn't.
No, and that's those, like, yeah, just didn't enjoy it. I'm not even going to spend more time on that. But,
yep, there you go. You heard it here first.
Napalm Lullaby number one by Image.
I did not see that. Hmm. Is this the good one or the bad one?
This is the good one. Those two are the bad ones.
Okay.
This book had me saying, what the crap is happening? Every three pages.
What?
Like, you think you establish, okay, all right, this is the main character. Oh, nope, not the main character. All right.
Oh,
this is what's happening. Oh, no freaking idea what's happening. Okay. Oh, okay. And literally by the last page, you're like, okay, maybe I have a grasp on what's happening here. But effectively, there is a dystopian world, a religious culture, manifests power while keeping everybody else poor. And there is a duo, a couple. I don't know what their relationship is. It starts out with like a weird Superman story. I don't even know what's going on.
what's happening?
But the shortest version is there is a young lady who can make people physically feel completely envelop their dreams. So you pay her to fully live out your dream. And she's got a samurai sidekick BFF, and they're both trying to escape the dystopian world. I was like, literally,
is his name Buckaroo Banzai?
Yeah. I literally don't have a good way to explain this, but this was fun to read, and I'll pick up issue two.
Fair enough.
But I mean, literally, it was like flipping channels every 3 minutes and making it a compelling story. But okay. Done well. Okay.
You picked up a that sounded like a Chris book.
It did sound like a Chris book.
But I didn't see it, so.
I literally picked it up. I was like, this could be fun. I picked up three number ones just for the sake of, all right, let's see if there's a number one worth reading. And one out of three.
I think I had a total of eight, so I almost did all of them. But yeah. One was a Star Wars book that was Jango Fett.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Which I kind of went into that figuring that probably wasn't going to hit.
Nah, that's
and
good.
Then
that's not going to be
Black Cat and Jackpot.
Thought about that one.
Also wanted to like, nope. Okay. What was the other one? Oh, the Hawkeye and Black Widow book from a few weeks ago, same thing. Like Marvel dumped a bunch of number ones that I was like, I could like this. But yeah. So Sam and Twitch, number one.
Hey.
But it's McFarlane's new jam. He's writing, he's not drawing.
Yeah, I could tell.
Yeah. So it's basically reading the movie Seven. Everything is dark, feels like it's raining all of the time, and it's a gritty police procedural.
Say what? You mean you had a kaiju book and a gritty police procedural? That's so surprising.
And I got Tom King dragging his dead mother through the desert. So
99 issues of this, folks. 99 issues of this.
Cool, cool, cool. NYPD stuff. You have two partners that obviously can't be different from each other. One's like the old school. I'm going to beat up everybody to get them to tell me the things that I'm a good cop, but I do bad things. And then a partner that is definitely the nerd and is like the super smart guy that just is quiet because he's like, whatever. And they both get suspended at the beginning of this because the big dude beats the crap out of people. And you're not supposed to do that as law enforcement. I know that's shocking.
And you can trust him. He's a cop now. Since the last episode you
I'm
watched.
Not a cop. I work for a police department. Don't tell people.
I'm not a cop is a very cop thing to say. Wink, wink.
Aren't you required to tell me if you're a cop, dude?
But literally, y'all, Chris has changed careers since the last episode. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, you have.
Fair. Yeah, that's fair.
That happened the week we were supposed to have recorded.
That was in the middle, but yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been exactly 4 weeks. So, yeah, good times. Maybe there's a reason I'm attracted to this kind of thing. It's really weird.
Yeah. Which means we're all screwed if they develop, like, a kaiju program.
Yes. It's going to be called Kaiju Cops. I can't show the last two pages of this book. So that's how this goes some dark places, y'all. The two cops get suspended, but the smart guy gets a call from a friend from the academy that's standing over a scene of a like seven mutilated bodies in a pile. And the guy's calling the smart guy like, I could use some help. Unlike some of the other ones where I was like, oh, this sounds like this will be fun police procedural. This is like, holy crap. Law and Order SVU and like some violent crime stuff in the movie Seven had a baby and the last page of this was developed. So
there you go.
Yeah. Well, McFarlane definitely do love that kind of stuff. So I'm not super shocked, but this is probably going to have a really solid noir feel to it. I kind of dig the cover for the second issue. That's the preview in like the Saturday Evening Post style.
Yeah.
Picture like there's some cool visuals that I think is going to come out of this. And I just hope they don't like flub a cool serial killer story. Cause I feel like a lot of people do the shocking, oh, look at the pile of weird bodies and here's this creepy dude. And then it's not interesting. Like Seven actually is one of my favorite movies because you become deathly afraid of a dude that's only on screen for 7 minutes. Like that's good writing. And also you don't become witness to a majority of the horrific things that he did either. This one's a little different. That one's in your face, but I like when people can tell those stories well. So I'm here for it. Yeah, good. That's the podcast.
Yeah. Hey, and I'll say this to add four extra issues and for me to have a character analysis writing break We did pretty good time-wise.
Yeah, we only... I mean, technically, we had a long pre-show, too, so this actually isn't going to be that much longer. But hey, you got bonus content, and you didn't have to pay for it. You're welcome.
But if you want to pay our fake Patreon...
But if you do want to join...
Taylor Swift-inspired friendship bracelets.
That... that are satirical and not at all similar in any way whatsoever to the branded trademark.
I'm going to see if my daughter will make me a pull list friendship bracelet for by the next episode.
So, yeah, that is, in fact, going to do it for us here at the Pull List. Episode 99 is now in the books and in your ears and your eyeballs.
99 podcast episodes.
Now we've been flagged on YouTube, so I guess it doesn't matter. It's true. We are over there on the YouTube, as I just implied, by our copyright violations that probably will hit. Who knows?
You act like I can sing that much in key.
Yeah, that's fair. As many of you know, we take this epic journey of podcasts and fandom with lots of other amazing podcasts over on the Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network. So be sure to visit lovethynerd.com for more info, previous episodes, and maybe find yourself a new show to add to your routine. Hector's got tons of content over there because he's just a machine.
Oh, I missed a month. I missed an episode too. So
see, so maybe it wasn't Chris's fault. So there.
I'd literally finished reading this morning the books we should have read last time.
I finished yesterday. That's not important. They have no idea when today is. Ha! But
it's the 30th.
Yeah, it's the 30th. It's Saturday morning, and we got up to drink caffeinated beverages and talk about comics with y'all because we love you.
It's not a bad day.
No, it's good. But wait, there is more. We wanted to let all of you know that that is a Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network, etc., and us are now part of a streaming on the Glue Network. That is GLU, which is a streaming platform available on your Roku or your smarts TVs, as well as your iPhone and Android via an app. So that's pretty cool because you can see our shining faces on a smart TV now, and that's like wild. So I'm going to take pictures of that for the gram because we're famous now. But Glue exists to unlock the inspirational value of face-centric programming, partnering with Christian content creators like, well, you know, us, and all of our friends over at Love Thy Nerd. So Love Thy Nerd, the Pull List podcast, we're all part of this new Glue thing, and we're proud to join some of our other friends from God Squad Church, Unity Gaming, as the first group of nerd culture channels on that platform. So you can download the Glue Network app today, search for Love Thy Nerd, and you'll find our shining faces on your TV, which is either really interesting or truly frightening. But that's pretty cool. We keep kind of growing as part of the Love Thy Nerd Network. And so, yeah.
The glue holds it together.
Oh, no. They're going to hate us now, but it's fine. We did it. We love all of you, and that's why it's fine. But Hector and I do honestly want to thank each and every one of you for choosing us as your primary comic book knowledge factory on a near weekly or monthly basis, just depending on what's going on. So don't leave us hanging. Rate and review the show on your favorite podcasting or smart television-based app. Today, we're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and the Glue Network now. So, you know, hit us up, show us that you love us, and just honestly, thank you. Thank each and every single one of you for listening. And remember, kids, read more comics.
I'm going to take all 7 continents of the Game of Risk. I'm the master of epic duel.